podcast is back, and we've got some serious CBS synergy going on in the off season because one of us does not have an off season. We're going to touch on the draft today on the CBSSports.com college basketball podcast, but it could just as easily be the CBSSports.com NBA podcast because Matt Moore, who is the me of the NBA blog at CBSSports.com, he's joining me. He does podcasts himself, and he's ridiculously knowledgeable. Actually, an NBA-obsessed guy. Matt, I don't know how you do it. How you doing? And thanks for coming on. Let's talk draft. How's your life, man?
It's good. I'm well. I think saying that I'm on the NBA U is a disservice to you. But other than that, you know, I think I'm doing okay. It's been a weird season with the whole schedule and how everything is stacked on top of one another. But excited the playoffs are coming and the draft lottery's next month, which is always one of my favorite parts of the year. And I'm good in general. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. All right, let's actually hit on the NBA real quick for one sec. Like, listeners of this podcast, some have probably had subscribed in their iTunes and it came up, they're like, all right, another podcast, sweet, this is what I look forward to every single day of my life. And then they hear that we're talking the draft NBA and they've already stopped and deleted the podcast. But others can certainly go in both worlds. I've always felt that the feeling that there are NBA fans and college basketball fans standing on opposite sides of the street is a little exaggerated. But for those who have not been paying a lot of attention to the NBA season this year, Matt, what is it? Can you kind of in 2 minutes kind of sum up the oddity that has been this cram schedule? I know whoever wins the title, well, first of all, looking back, that Spurs title in 99, it always felt weird to me. This one doesn't feel like it will be the same. It'll be both. That one is justified and this one will be too, but that one almost feels like a black sheep of sorts of titles. But this season so far, what are writers, fans, how are they taking this thing on considering it's such an uncommon season?
And there's always if writers can find anything to complain about, they're going to do that. So, of course, there have been complaints about, the field goal percentages are down. Players have been more tired. Injuries have racked up. There's been a lot of that kind of talk. But in general, it's been pretty nuts from this perspective, which is you're seeing so many blown leads. You'll have games where a team will be up 20 and wind up down 20 in the fourth. And it's just – you'll see runs, obviously, in the course of an NBA game, of any NBA game, but the extremes have been just awe-inspiring in the way that these massive comebacks have happened on a regular basis, and no lead is really safe. And then just because all of the numbers that we're seeing and all of the trends are really strange and really interesting and kind of nuts, and there's a reason that I've kind of called this the season without reason. It's because trying to understand a lot of what's gone on is very difficult. Cuban's talked a lot about this. Mavs owner Mark Cuban's talked a lot about how basically you have to throw out almost everything from the season as an outlier. Now, a lot of that is based upon the fact that his team essentially celebrated for an extra 4 months and everything went a little bit nuts and their season has gone haywire. But in general, we're seeing a lot of the same trends, which is things are just don't make much sense. Kobe Bryant is leading the league in minutes per game. Okay. And Derrick Rose, the 23-year-old MVP, is all of a sudden injured and has 5 separate injuries and missed 24 games. Okay. And then all of these things are kind of racking up. The Knicks, which have always been such a defensive, woeful defensive team, they're a top 10 defense this year. So we're seeing all these really strange things. You talked about that 99 Spurs team. It's interesting because I could see it being regarded similarly after the season's over because of this. The West is so wide open because of the kind of fluctuation with the Lakers stepping back and a lot of the other teams stepping forward and the Thunder not being 100% ready yet, and they may get there, that there's a possibility a team could come out of the West that the East simply isn't prepared for, and it could be a random champion that no one was really prepared to see winning the title. This is a really interesting year, and the playoffs are going to be fascinating because of how wide open it is. I think that's one of the things that I think college basketball has going for it so much is the fact that everything's so wide open and everyone's got a chance. It's more that than ever this year. They're still obviously the favorites, but I think it's a little bit more wide open than most years.
How much college hoop do you get to see? Just so listeners know, Matt is ridiculous. I can't even follow him on Twitter because the dude tweet. You are a machine. He is as – no joke, man. I don't know if there's another writer that I know that's as – obsessed, and I say that in a good way, and also social aware and addicted, also I say that in a good way, as you. I mean, you it truly feels like you just breathe this stuff, and I don't know how you make time for your loving and forgiving family. So with all that said, do you even get 5 hours combined to watch college basketball at all during the season? I guess this would have been an exception because of the lockout, but normally, is it just all NBA and you try and maybe get a little bit of college hoop in there?
No, I mean, I try and I really like the college game. That's one of the kind of secrets is I really like the college game. So I'll make time. I think that, you know, I really like watching SEC ball. I grew up in Arkansas. So watching, you know, I grew up during the Nolan Richardson 48 minutes of hell. So I have a real appreciation for college ball and I make sure that I find time for it. And, you know, now I live in Big 12 country and I live, you know, 40 minutes from the University of Kansas, which is, you know, you can't be in this area and not be affected by college basketball. I went to Missouri. So, you know, college basketball is in my blood and I make sure to watch it and track it. And mostly I will say that I do it because I want to see these prospects. I want to see what they look like. I want to see how they're going to develop. And that's what makes watching Kentucky so fun. But, you know, I make time as much as I can. There are weeks when I just simply can't cram it into the schedule, but I try and fit in wherever I can because it's, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch.
You definitely said Nolan Richardson's 48 minutes of hell. So, So I don't know really how much of that college game seeps into your pores there, but I had to call you out on that.
That's my friend Greg Gordian runs an excellent Spurs blog called 48 Minutes of Hell. That's where that ends up getting.
There you go.
That's where that comes from. God, yeah. That's
all. Hey, dude, it's all good. Where were you when Norfolk State happened? Where were you? Where were you in those in that, you know, 2 hour span that kind of will be one of the most memorable games for all the wrong reasons in the history of Missouri basketball?
Do you ever wake up and then just absolutely know that something terrible is going to happen to something you care about? That was what happened to me that day. When the Chiefs lost to the Indianapolis Colts in 2004, I believe, when they started 8-0 and then collapsed down the stretch, and I woke up that morning and was like, we're going to lose. I just knew it in my heart. I woke up that day and it was the day after the NBA trade deadline, so I was completely wiped out. I hadn't slept in – I'd slept 6 hours in 3 days, which was not healthy, I might add. And was just running on fumes. So I actually slept through the first half because I hadn't had time to pay attention to when it was. And I woke up and was like, the Norfolk State game's on. I was like, I'm going to check Twitter and see what's happening. I turned it on and sure enough, I knew it was a nightmare. You know, I caught the end and it's, you know, that's what makes college basketball great is that things which make absolutely no sense can happen and they're fantastic and they're amazing to watch. And that's what makes college basketball amazing that's all I'm going to say about that.
It's all good. We won't stand that. Just one real quick note on my end. I was actually it was an off day in Portland where I was, and I was in the VCU locker room for media obligation, and a lot of the guys at VCU played AAU ball with guys at Norfolk State. So to hear these guys calling out the NSU guys on the TV by their nicknames or what they went by, that was pretty damn cool. Just to kind of be in that locker room and experience that as kind of one underdog rooted on an even bigger other underdog. All right, as for the draft, let's get to it. We're doing this pod here because Kentucky made it official on Tuesday night and that their 500 classmen are going to the draft. It's kind of an awkward time to have a pod because obviously the lottery is still to be had, and so we don't know the order of what teams are picking. But just to give you an idea, we were talking briefly before we started recording about teams and their scouting and their draft boards. Can you enlighten listeners a little bit, Matt, on just how much nobody knows anything right now at all outside of obviously Davis is going to be the first pick. It doesn't matter who's going to be there. I mean, it's really an Andrew Luck situation as far as I'm concerned. But other than that, sure, Kid Gilchrist is going to be a top four, top three pick. Yeah, that's something to bank on. But in terms of overall draft boards, I mean, no one could really tell you right now what the Kings are truly wanting to do or what the Blazers are truly wanting to do at this point, right?
No, because, I mean, teams are still kind of trying to – they're still evaluating players right now. They're finding guys that are stepping up and that they're going to want to at least consider when they're making decisions down the line. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, so many teams draft on best talent available because that's been consistently the best strategy to have. But, you know, you have guys like Gerald Green stepping up and that changes the situation at small forward for the Nets. And you have things like J.J. Hickson going off for Portland and showing that he can, you know, potentially be a contributor there. And that's going to adjust what they do at power forward and so forth. So there's some of that. I do think that, you know, there's some stability, I think, in tiers of guys, but that's also going to shift so much based on the workouts. You know, I think Jared Sullinger right now is probably at the lowest point that he's going to hit from now to the draft in terms of his stock value, and that his workouts are going to probably, workouts and interviews in particular, are going to raise his value so much that it's hard to say whether he's going to be in tier, you know, two or three. But we are seeing some separation. Yes, Davis is obviously in a class all by himself, but I think that we see, based off of what we're hearing, that guys like Drummond and Kid Gilchrist and probably Barnes and Robinson are kind of in that second tier. And after that, things get a little bit weird. And then there's some X factors in there as well. I think Brandon Beal's one that he could go as high as 2 and wouldn't shock me, and he could go as low as 12 and that wouldn't surprise me either.
I'm saving Barnes for a pod down the road. Let's stick to the workout thing here, okay? Let's expound on this here. You know, even more like with football, and you got the draft, you got the combine, and the combine has become this huge thing. It's a television event. You had fans going and watching the combine. I mean, it's mind blowing, but not at all shocking when you know how the NFL has just taken over the world. But in college football and to the pro, the transition, I can get that a little more, only because, yes, you've got tape, you've got games, but it's much more limited than a college basketball player. Like, to me, like, I don't know. I've never gone to a pre-draft camp or seen a workout yet. So I come at this from afar and with a little bit of a naivete view. But I want to know whether your opinion or if you've got actual, you know, sort of perspective in talking with some front office guys or whomever to back this up. But how much does a workout really impact a guy's draft status? Because to me, you look at Sullinger, he is what he is. You've got plenty of tape to know what he is. Now, interviews are totally legit. Like, obviously, you want to do this, and nothing's going to ever stop the workouts from happening. And that's kind of just as much of a way to truly get more evaluation as you can, as it is there needs to be this sense that these guys have to be doing something leading up to the draft. I get that. But in my opinion, like, Sullinger is what he is. And anyone that thinks, oh, like, let's say the Hornets get the 3rd pick, which I guess is the odds where they'll do it now. And right now, Sullinger is seen anywhere from like a 6 to 9 guy, from what I gather. Like, in my opinion, there's no reason why Sullinger should jump up to a 3 because New Orleans sees his workouts and is so impressed by him. Is that kind of stuff common? Do you think that it could happen in this sort of draft? Has it happened in past drafts in regard to just a guy's stock kind of needlessly rising or falling based on what he does in the month of May?
Yeah, I think it definitely does happen. I know it does happen, because what ends up happening, I think basketball more than football, and I think you would probably agree here, that so much of it is interactive. And what I mean by that is, it's not just how you play, it's how your teammates are playing. That affects how you play, where you get the ball, how you get the ball, what role you're playing, how you're coached, what situation you're in mentally, what position that you're in. All of these things are very fluid in basketball. I think a little bit more so than it is in football, where the job is so singularly focused, you know, drive your guy back, pass the ball, catch the ball, run the ball. And so I think in that, there's a drive to see, okay, what does this guy look like close up, doing the things that we want him to do, not what he's been asked in college. You know, what does his work ethic look like? Because that's always such a huge concern too. You have to understand, you know, with the NBA draft being such a, I mean, it's a minefield. If you draft wrong, which happens so much, because in my opinion, it's a huge, huge gamble. It's nothing but really a crapshoot at a lot of levels. There are guys that are excellent at doing it, but for the most part, it's been a mystifying process for 80% of the executives in the league. You know, if you miss, it's such a devastating effect. So you want to try and get as much information on not only, you know, what they can do, but who they are. Now, Sullinger, it's one where it's like, look, no matter what he does in a workout, he's not going to reveal himself to be faster defensively. He's never going to be faster defensively because it's not how he's structurally built. He's not athletic. He doesn't physically have the body to be able to move quick enough laterally or rotation wise on defense to change that. But I think that, you know, moving up from, you know, 9 to 6 isn't going to be exceptionally difficult for him if he's able to make an impression. Because the other thing is, You know, this is a league where executives and scouts and GMs and owners make decisions a lot of the time based on their personal feeling, not based off of an empirical overview of everyone's input and say, okay, well, we all kind of conclude it's, oh, I really like this guy. I believe in him and I'm going to take him. And that's where I think the workouts can be both good and bad, because sometimes teams will recognize, wow, this kid's got the work ethic that you want to see at the NBA level. Wow, this kid's got the ability to do this exceptionally well. And that's what we want to draft him to do. And a lot of time they just see like, okay, well, I really like that about him, and I connect that with him, so we're going to, you know, commit to him despite there being better talents on board. And I think that's where people get into trouble a lot.
Yeah, it will forever be an inexact science, obviously, and that's part of the fun. I mean, so much of sports is just unpredictability of the future. That's why we get so invested in it, because we don't know what's going to happen as much as we'd like to think we do. In almost every avenue, we just simply can't predict it. All right, let's look at a few players here, Matt, and tell me. All right, I'll give you a player, and you tell me which team. Let's have a little fun. Like, which team, regardless of where they're going to draft, would fit them best? So let's go. Okay. Like, let's go MKG, Kid Gilchrist. You know, I was talking with Parrish, and Parrish maintains that like whoever gets MKG, like, that team will just. It will never suffer when he is on the floor, just because he won't let that happen. He's got one of those mindsets. I hate the term he's a winner. Like, I really hate it, because everyone freaking loses. Okay, so when he loses, what is he then? But in terms of just sheer force of positive will and continual, like, I'm just going to pound your rear while I'm on the floor and won't let you beat me, MKG's one of those guys. In your opinion, which team would – is in most dire need of someone like MKG, like, right away, who I think can start in the NBA next year?
Yeah, I've been on MKG since the very first game that I caught of Kentucky. I purposely sought out to catch him and see what he could do. It's interesting that you asked it, because I'm looking at these teams and it's like, you know, the Bobcats have so much talent. I worry about anybody, or such a lack of talent rather, that I worry about anybody going to them. Honestly, I worry about that just being too much pressure, and they're going to have to do so much on the Bobcats. But then you look at it and I'm like, well, the Wizards, okay, you know, Wall gets to run with a guy that can finish in transition. It's a kid that can be the defensive force that they need. They need someone to be the defensive leader on that squad, and he's a guy that can step up and do that. I think he's a guy that would fit really well in terms of being the leader in terms of perimeter defense, and give Wall a little bit of a break in terms of not having to be as focused and do everything on his own. Even though I don't think Gilchrist is going to be an amazing scorer, I just think his overall contribution.
Right.
You know, the Hornets, I mean, that's another – you even look at them, like Trevor Ariza. If you're able to pair, you know, Gilchrist with Trevor Ariza in terms of splitting time at the three, Ariza gets to teach him all those defensive skills that he's got, which are excellent. That's a pretty good combo. And then they can move Ariza as his deal goes down. That helps New Orleans. The Kings, you know, that's a perfect location for him, because that's they've got so much talent in their backcourt. They really need a true three. You know, and with DeMarcus Cousins, then you've got a guy to really be a leader, a guy from the, when, you know, out of Cal system that Cousins is likely to identify with, and who's got kind of the ability to be a character leader for that team, which is something they desperately need. The Cavs, same kind of deal, where, you know Kyrie Irving, Kid Gilchrist, Tristan Thompson, you've all of a sudden got a core. So it's hard for me to find a team that doesn't really fit with. In terms of the best one, you know, I like him on the Kings a lot. I think that that's a really nice fit. I like him on the Raptors quite a bit. I think him going to Portland puts him in a very good position, because of the kind of the talent that's going to be around him. He's not going to have to be, here's the ball, go score. I think that's going to be a good position for him. There's a lot of situations, though, where I find it hard to find places where I don't think that MKG is going to be successful. And maybe that's the biggest reason why he's considered number two overall, is that he's so likely to succeed no matter where he goes.
Right. And my question was intentionally faulty from the get-go. It's kind of like he's who he is. He's an awesome player. What team wouldn't be better off with him? I go for the kind of not direct opposite, but someone I would drift far from that. A shoot first two who might need to play some one, even though that would probably be a destructive strategy. Austin Rivers, who I am, I don't know what kind of pro he's going to be, Matt. Here is a guy who I feel got more of the reins that he needed at Duke, but it never really materialized. I think he was always going to be a one and done no matter what. But where do you think Austin Rivers can go where his – I mean, I want to say he's a selfish player. I feel that is fair. But with rightfully so, I mean, dude, the guy's first step is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he's got the athleticism to play at the NBA level. But what team could take him realistically right now and fit him into a spot where he's going to get the most out of his talent and the team will benefit as well? Because I feel like there's a heavy chunk of teams that just would not benefit by having Austin Rivers on their lineup, because I feel like they've already got one or two similar like-minded Austin Rivers already. And so what's the point? They don't need another guy like that.
I think there's some options for him. I think that, well, for starters, you know, talking about irrespective of draft position, if the Hornets, for whatever reason, and they will re-sign Aaron Gordon, if the Hornets were to not re-sign Aaron Gordon, that team would be so void of offensive talent that Rivers could basically come in and do what he wants. He'd have a veteran point guard in Jared Jack to kind of manage the offense and teach him how to run point. When he was going to do it, but he could also operate as a combo guard next to Jack, and he's tall enough and long enough to where he can play that combo guard next to another point guard and be okay. I think that's an okay situation for him. I think Portland's a really strong candidate for him. You know, I think when you look at, one, their draft history, and two, just the approach of, you know, how good would that be with, you know, they're probably going to have some turnover at point guard. It's unlikely that Raymond Felton is going to be there long term. Rivers kind of gives them someone without injury concerns that they can kind of give the ball to and say, go produce for us in the backcourt. Wesley Matthews took a step backwards this year. I think that's a situation where they're strong enough in terms of their overall team to where he's not going to be able to be selfish because he's surrounded by so many veterans. You know, that's a really good fit. Now, I think there are pitfalls too. You know, I think if he lands on Charlotte, he and Kemba Walker are going to be two undersized. There aren't enough basketballs in the universe. There just aren't. There aren't enough. Unless you're cloning them, like in Multiplicity, like you just simply can't produce right. enough.
Well, okay. Well, hold on. Like, I haven't seen a ton of NBA here, but like Kemba was a score force point guard that made it work. Like, has he translated that well to the next level? Because if he has, I feel like Rivers won't. Like, I feel like if you ask Rivers to, he's never gonna be a pass first player. He's just not going to be. Like, you can't expect him to do that. And yet, I feel like he's not going to. Like, he'll be so overmatched against so many other twos. I don't know. So has Kemba, but has Kemba made that transition well? I know he's on a terrible team, but has he kind of glided along into his spot fairly decently given where he was drafted last year?
There are signs that he's going to be okay to good is okay. How I would put it. He's, you know, for a team that has very little to be positive about, he and Biyombo are really the only things to be positive about. Okay. There are nights when he looks like he can be that kind of scoring one that can really, you know, be a part of a good team with a great system. There are a lot of problems in terms of defense and other elements that the kind of concerns that you would have had from the start. And I think that's, you know, in large part where he winds up getting evaluated. But with Rivers, it's one, I think that you can, as much as his attitude as it exists, I think there are situations where if you put him, you know, we talk about every player needs to be put in the right position. Kyrie Irving, you could have dropped into any environment and he was going to succeed. That's his overall persona, attitude, approach, and skill set. He was going to be fine. If he'd been on the Bobcats, great. If he'd been on, you know, the Kings, awesome. Anyone would have worked out well with Irving. But I think with Rivers, it's much more dependent on not only the players around him, but the coach. If he lands in Cleveland, you know, Byron Scott is going to mold him. He does, you know, really well with guards, and he'll make it clear about this is Kyrie Irving's team. And if Rivers does decide to balk at that, it's hard for me to imagine with his dad breathing down his neck at this level. Yeah. I think that can be a combination that might be able to work. But again, it's not a perfect fit. I think that's one of the reasons that Rivers has drifted in some cases all the way down to the late teens and sometimes further in some extreme mocks I've seen and all the way up as high as 9, because he can also come in and absolutely just produce at a ridiculous level, I think, because of his scoring capacity. So it's going to be really whether or not he's able to be put in a system that's going to support him finding a role versus kind of saying, go do what you want, because you actually don't want to feed into him having that kind of authority.
All right, last player here, and we'll make it quick. Perry Jones, impressions, where would he fit, and what's your overall opinion on Jones?
I watched Jones in person. I went to see him 3 times this year, which is the highest I've seen anybody. And well, no, except for Robinson, second most I've seen anybody. There are guys.
Let it out, man. Let it out.
There, and I've got the same problems as everybody else does, which is, you know, I just watched Thomas Robinson back him into the paint, under the basket, into the cameras, up the stands, into the popcorn vendors, out the back door, down the street, into the river. I mean,
yeah,
he's not going to be able to do that. And so that's why you see your talk. Anytime you hear guys being like, well, can he play the three? That's a bad sign for a guy his size, because that's not really, right. Ooh, is he versatile enough to play the three? It's, we're terrified about playing him at the four. Is it possible that we could maybe fit him in at the three? And the answer is really no. And so, but that's not to say, look, stretch fours in this league have a lot of value. And that's something that you kind of have to watch the league night in and night out to know. The guys that can run the pick and pop, catch the ball well, and immediately move swiftly and smoothly into their jumper and knock it down from 16 feet, those are the guys that make a lot of money in this league, because they bring a lot of value. He's going to need a whole lot of strength training, but who doesn't? And there's no reason to think that despite his kind of attitude that he can't, he's absolutely going to be a bust. It's just one where he cannot be drafted into a situation where he has to be the star. He absolutely 100% cannot. He has to play next to someone who can shoulder the load, both from a, you know, I think production standpoint, and from really a, I'm going to go out there and take hold of this team. You know, I think that, you know, Goodman and I's draft, mock draft that I'm working up right now, the Pistons have him picking up. And that's a really good combo, because Greg Monroe will go down and he'll do the dirty work, and Jones can kind of drift and get some points on the perimeter and maybe, you know, act as a pinch post man. And as he learns and grows into his role, that could be a really formidable combo. But he cannot be come in and be expected to be the guy, because he simply doesn't have, I don't think, the makeup, at least mentally. Now, maybe he'll just absolutely stun people with a – we've seen this happen where guys just absolutely stun scouts and evaluators and media, both in workouts and then summer league. It's not unheard of for that to happen, but if – you know, we have to go off of what we've seen. And that's why I think there's so many red flags around Jones and why he's drifted so far back from where he started at the beginning of the year.
I will not be able to furrow my brow hard enough if Perry Jones becomes a top six pick again after workouts. I mean, honestly, in my opinion, he's not even a top 15 pick. And I say that admittedly as someone who is nowhere near close to an expert. I've just seen him so much. And I actually have talked to a couple of guys, actual NBA players who admit they once loved him. And now it's just like, no, just not there. And he still seems as a top 10 pick in plenty of places. And just to put it kindly, I'm confused by all the hype around him. But listen, man, this was fun. You know, I just wanted to kind of introduce the listeners to kind of what we'll do in some regards. Once we get the lottery going and we know the order, we can get more into that. Once we get some workouts, we can get more into that. But we can also kind of, you know, look at some players, some comparisons to recent guys and where they were drafted and some of these guys. So we'll have some good stuff coming down the road. But I just wanted to kind of introduce you to my audience on this side, and hopefully some of the NBA guys were lured over on the NBA blog to listen to this as well, and they can get to know me as well. You know, this was good.
Hey, CBSI Unite, man.
That's right, man. Such great power. So are you trying to get in a few hours of sleep here before the playoffs kick off? And what is it like? 10 days away? How far are we from the playoffs?
2 weeks, I guess. Less than two that. Weeks. It'll be a week and a half now. Wow, that's amazing how time flies. Yeah, no, and we're won't be no sleep till Brooklyn, man. It's gonna be nothing but playoff previews and watching the playoff race and the seedings and keep an eye on all of it, and then playoff previews and then playoffs for 2 months, and then the draft and then summer league and then kick it back up, man. Again.
I know, man. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the playoffs, just because with the smaller season, smaller sample size, and so the results of a 7-game series, while they're supposed to be true barometers, we might get a a couple of haywire results this year. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I follow the NBA all season long. I'm not a fanatic about it. I am a Bulls fan. Parents grew up in Chicago. I lived there. I was younger. You know, 23 converted me and all that good stuff. But you know, once May gets here, I get pretty heavily invested into it, and I'm hoping that we just have some decent playoffs here. I don't want a lot of injuries, and I'm hoping the style of play is pretty decent. That's all I want. Can your sport give me that? Can you promise me that, Matt?
It'll be exciting. No matter what, it'll be exciting. Exactly. And exactly. Hilarious at times.
You can follow which Twitter account do you want me to plug, Mr.
Just plug the Matt Moore CBS one.
Okay. I think that's got the fewest followers, right? I mean, he's got 3 accounts and he's tweeting constantly, but yeah, Matt Moore CBS. Feel free to follow him for completely unfiltered stream of consciousness opinions on anything that's happening on the court on a nightly basis. It's been great, man. We'll circle back around here in a couple of weeks and take this pod to the next level. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right, we're gonna have more podcasts coming up soon. Borzello will be on to do a recruiting one. I'm trying to get, you know what? I'm not gonna spoil the one that I'm trying to get because I want to actually get it, so I don't want to have your hopes up high. And then next week we should be talking to Mark Titus, who wrote, he was the walk-on at Ohio State. He wrote a book about that, and it's pretty damn funny as well. So we'll have plenty of pods coming back into the rotation here, not taking the off season off whatsoever. You've been listening to the CBSSports.com College Basketball / NBA podcast. We'll talk to you soon.